Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today I'm happy to bring us a pretty cool guest, man. He's done a lot of good things in New York. He's still making a lot of moves. His name is Drew Spaventa. If the picture in the background, you know what I mean, that says enough right there. But I want Drew, man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here. You know, we've been talking for a while, so I'm excited to be your guest.
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, tell me a little bit more about this picture. I obviously want one, but it's a super dope picture, man. Can you tell me more about it and the idea behind it and where we can get one?
Yeah, thank you. Again, everybody, it seems that every time I speak to somebody and we have this picture in the background, that's the first thing that people say. I originally had this made because I'm a very self-deprecating guy. And I always say two things, right? Or one thing, rather. There's two types of people that are going to look this picture behind me. Either A, you're going to think that I'm full of myself and you're not going to like it. But what I think is going to happen is most people are going to be like, what is this guy all about, right? Why the hell is there a big picture of him painted on himself? Is he this full of himself? And the bottom line is, again, I'm very self-deprecating. I make fun of myself. If you come into my office, I got Bob Ross over there. I got a bunch of collectibles, Back to the Future, Batman, Ghostbusters. But as far as this thing is concerned, I just wanted a picture of myself in some ridiculous portrait. And I went onto a website. It's called Nobelify. Wasn't paid for anything like that to endorse them, but it's a fun website. Went on there, looked at a bunch of stuff that they had. And I said, there's going to be no picture that I'd be best suited for than one that shows me having an amazing body that apparently I'm never going to get, wrestling mythological creature like the three-headed Cerberus. So I decided to get this ridiculous portrait of myself. Looks pretty good. It actually looks like it was painted. My fund manager actually put it in a canvas for me as a present. And I promised my chief technology officer, I said, listen, any podcast that I do moving forward, this is going to have to be the background. So here we are today.
Anybody with a bald head must feel proud, man. Because, like, you know what I mean?
I'm sure you would agree. I'm sure you would agree, man.
Gotta love it. That's why I was like, I gotta find me one of those, man. Give me a little bit about your background, man. Let us know, you know, where you came from, how you grew up, and how you got into the VC alternative investing space.
Yeah, it was a long road, one that's not really traveled in our industry. I started single parent. My mother, my father wasn't around. I just reconnected with him a few years ago, kind of got his side of the story of how things happened in my childhood. But he wasn't around, so I grew up with a single mother, what I like to call, as I tell everybody, Americanized poverty. And I always make sure to call it Americanized because other countries have true poverty. True. The worst person off in this country still has it pretty good compared to other countries. Exactly. So I say Americanized poverty, you know, welfare, all that stuff, moving every few months because we couldn't afford anything, you know, lived in a homeless shelter when I was a child, all that stuff. So I didn't have, I'll put it to you this way. I was always obsessed because not having money and always getting being, I guess, what you would call the poor kid of the class. I was always obsessed with wealth and decisions behind wealth and how to make money. And I always dreamt since I was a little kid of being able to be financially secure, more than financially secure, very, very successful financially. And I got obsessed with business. And that's really started, obviously, my obsession with business. As I approached my late teens and got into my 20s, I started a DJ company. I started a construction company, a sound system installation company. Went through a bunch that was a learning experience, didn't work out. But my first true successful venture was becoming a DJ and being what we call a mobile DJ on Long Island through New York into Connecticut, into New Jersey. Mm-hmm. From there, I started doing pretty well, starting learning the ins and outs of how to run a very small business. More importantly, as I've explained to a few other people that I've done a podcast with, I learned the nature of human beings, how to interact with people, how to read people. And then from there, met an individual that was a financial professional. He took me under his wing. Things didn't work out between him and I, but that was really my entry into the world of finance. And then I really had this vision, you know, going back 14 years ago, that I wanted to create an investment, an all-encompassing investment firm to manage assets for individuals. And it was a rough and bumpy ride because here I am a few months away from being becoming 37 after a few other ventures and being a managing director for an investment firm, starting another investment company with a business partner that didn't work out because it wasn't, stars weren't aligned between the both of us. I decided to launch the company that bears my name, the Spaventa Group. So as it stands, what we are is what I call an investment company, right? We have three different divisions. We have an asset management division where we manage assets via our several investment funds, which right now our bread and butter is VC. We have an advisory division, which we do traditional financial planning and wealth management. And then we have an insurance division as well. So that's where we are today. You know, we've been around for a few years. We're scaling considerably. We have a little over 40 people within the organization. So we're not a multi-billion dollar firm as of yet, but we're not small fries either. And we're growing by the month, interviewing a lot of other people to join the organization. We're going to start growing our brand in our own backyard in addition to nationally. We've had a nice amount of success so far, but yeah, that's where we are today.
It's funny, man, we have similar backgrounds. And one thing that I do talk about a lot of times is I think the benefit of growing up poor, because I grew up the same way, you develop this like drive and this determination to be successful. And obviously you go towards having money because you didn't have it, but that also gives you compassion to want to help other people out. And so that's So yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of coming from the background and seeing what you're doing. So you say you guys are heavy in the VC space. What kind of companies do you like investing in, and what's your minimum dollar amount when it comes to the venture capital space?
Yeah, we deal with retail investors. We're not dealing with ultra high net worth investors or predominantly institutions. You have to be accredited, which means that you have to make either $200,000 a year single, $300,000 a year joint with a spouse, or $1 million net worth outside your primary residence. So that's 100% of our client base. Our minimums could be as low as $25,000. So it's nothing extraordinary, but we have a lot of clients. We have a little over 1,000 now over the last few years. And again, we're growing considerably. As far as what companies we like to invest in, we're big in the secondary market. So we're investing a lot in late stage companies. Prior investments include SpaceX, Airbnb, which has got, we've already had a liquidity event. We've invested in SoFi, which is short for social finance. Palantir Technologies was an investment of ours. Uber, Lyft, so on and so forth. Epic Games, a defense company by the name of Anduril Industries. So to answer your question, as far as what kind of companies, I never like to limit myself to a specific industry. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say we're only focusing exclusively on artificial intelligence or financial technology or space or anything like that. I look at myself as an opportunistic investor and kind of look at the broad spectrum of what's going on and where there might be opportunity. Now, mind you, we also have to follow what's take that top-down approach, see what the economy is doing right now, where we think things are going to be 3 to 5 years from now, even further from that, and make an educated decision on what we're going to do. But at the end of the day, I mean, it really comes down to strategy because, you know, we're playing a high risk, high reward game, even with companies that are in the later stage of their business cycles. So the bottom line is, in the event that we have an investment that doesn't work out the way we want, we have to strategize. In the event that we have a company that generates us a crazy multiple for our clients, which we've had, we strategize again. But ultimately, we're very in the know and constantly digging in to see what aspects of the market are going to be working out, what industries are going to be coming through that are going to be big. I know that everybody's talking now because of ChatGPT, generative artificial intelligence. You know, we were following that, you know, a few months back. And I think a major reason for that is because of our network. We're constantly plugged into what's going on and everything like that. And we're just really trying to isolate the best companies that we feel that we're going to make a return for our investors.
What's the minimum check size for you guys going in on a company, even later stages?
$25,000.
Okay. You did say that. So then I have to ask this question, man. The venture capital space in the U.S. is very tricky. In 2019, 2020, when all those monies were going toward investment firms, none of the VCs were giving money to minority owners. So coming from New York, you know how it goes with people coming from certain demographics. It's very hard to get funds for business. What's your outlook on investing? And why do you think that is? Like, you know, some of the VCs in the U.S. only invest in particular corporations that don't have that many minority owners, because the funds that went into that industry for minorities was 1%. And there's a lot of money that went into that space. So what do you guys approach toward minority owners in that space when it comes to giving funds?
Yeah, as far as that's concerned, the answer is, I don't know why it's like that. Minority owners, I mean, we're predominantly not primary investors at this point. Everything we buy is secondary. Mm-hmm. So one of the companies that we're approached with or we're looking at happens to be, you know, no minorities there, or it's all white owned. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's a company we want, we're still going to invest in it. The minority question, right? So I'll put it to you this way. I'm a white straight guy, right? If you've been following the news over the last 3 to 4 years, I haven't made, right? As a white straight guy.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
I have no bearings, whatever. I walk out and the sun's shining on me, right? The way I look at it is my organization is very diverse. Mm-hmm. I've had Asian American, Latin American, non-straight people, mm-hmm. black, white. I'm the only guy in town that had women. Okay.
Yeah.
So my approach, and I'm very open about this, mm-hmm. I don't look at any particular group and say, I'm going to help you out and give you an opportunity over this individual because you're black, mm-hmm. because you're Latin American, because you're gay, because you're straight, or because of this. No matter what your background is, I'm going to give you the opportunity. So the reason why I'm talking about what I've done in my firm is because I can't talk about the 1% of VCs and what the hell they do. I can't. Mm-hmm. I can only talk about what I do. Mm-hmm. And the way I look at it is, listen, I'm going to give you all the opportunity in the world to make yourself successful. Right. I don't care what your background is. You're going to come on board. We're going to see what we could do. We're going to see if you could cut it. If you can, great. If you can't, you can't. Yeah. And I hate having to bring up, I mean, obviously we're having a conversation, but I hate having to bring up like, hey, listen, we have, you know, 7 black guys and 2 Latino guys and 1 gay person. Cause that to me is kind of weaponizing what I've done with my people out there. It mm-hmm. really is. Mm-hmm. But that said, I think my message is far more powerful, where I'm not going to, despite the history of the country or this, that, I'm not going to step up and say, I'm going to cut you some slack because of your background or mm-hmm. because you're historically oppressed. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you that opportunity. Mm-hmm. If you do succeed, you succeeded not because I felt bad for you or because you were historically oppressed or anything. You succeeded because you were the best for the job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's my opinion.
It's funny because you're a business owner. And so I've talked about this before on podcasts, because a lot of people that listen to the narrative, they don't own a business. So they don't know that business owners tend to hire based on the bottom line. We don't care about, it could be an alien. If that alien come down and they do a better job than a black person, Mexican, a white person, I'm going to hire the alien. And it's not me being any type of way. It's just like, I don't have to stick with a certain demographic because I'm a certain color, right? I can choose the best for the benefit of my business, right? So I think it's funny that you said it, because most people like to be PC when it comes to business, right? Or they want to tear the narrative, or that's what's being told.
Oh, talk too. It's all talk.
Correct.
Like chief diversity officer, that's just you putting some sort of BS name to something to show, hey, listen, we're being cool and collective. Well, what are you actually doing?
What are you
actually
doing?
As far as, you know, the race narrative, I think there's racists.
For sure.
I think black people could be racist. I think there are black people that are racist. I think obviously there's white people that are racist.
Yeah.
There's Spanish people that are racist, Asian Americans that are racist. I think there's non-straight people that don't like straight. There's That just goes around. Right. I think the majority of people are cool, though. They don't have a problem with it. I think the majority of people, what we see on TV and what the media covers, is all the negative aspects, because that's what's going to get the most eyeballs. That's what's going to generate the most advertising. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to a greater extent, I think my story is kind of unique, because I think it's less of a race, sexuality issue, religion issue, and more of a class.
Correct. Class.
Okay, because we have wealthy black people, you know, take Jay-Z or Will Smith or, you know, any wealthy black person. Their kids are growing up fine.
True.
They are. Their kids are growing up a lot better than some poor white people, right? Again, you would look at me as like a straight white dude that's, of course, you own an investment firm. Of course, you're successful. Well, no, it took me a long time to get here. And if you look at statistics, I should be either a drug addict or homeless at this point, based on my background. And the unfortunate thing is also, if you look at my environment, I don't know what happened. I don't know if you want to call it God or whatever, but I always had an inner drive that I don't want to be what my environment was. Now, I've been in some really rundown neighborhoods that were predominantly white, by the way. And listen, it, you know, it's, I can't say I could relate to, you know, a Black person or a Spanish person or anything like that. But what I can do, taking a step back and seeing some of these neighborhoods when, you know, I was hustling as a teenager and everything like that. I won't, you know, hey, listen, it was 25 years ago, but I did it. It also gives you more experience.
Correct.
And that sees you from a different light. I know how life could be when you're pretty well off. And I know how life could be when you're pretty not well off.
Yeah.
And you got to go to the bank and deposit $1 because you're negative 17 cents.
Correct.
If you don't deposit that $1, you're going to overcharge with $35.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think the issue to a greater extent.
Socioeconomic.
Yeah. And really the neighborhoods, it's unfortunate, man. But like if you take a rundown Black neighborhood, what you would call the ghetto. Right. I think the issue is it's not from like a top down government approach, but it's definitely a community approach. And I know that's hard for a lot of people to say, but it's, I think it's really true, man. You know, because statistically speaking, if 70% of Black people grow up without a father, who are kids going to look like? Who's a male? Who's a male going to look at for guidance?
Correct. Person with money in the neighborhood.
Yeah. That's where, and it's going to be this vicious cycle.
Correct.
You really do have to take that community approach. And again, it could be a rundown Black neighborhood. It could be a rundown white neighborhood, whatever it is. And that's the dialogue that I'm fine speaking about. You're fine speaking about. But a lot of people can't. So then it becomes, well, what's the answer? And that's something we're looking into, too. I already told them. I said, listen, I want eventually, once we get to a certain point, because strategically you have to be there and we're still in hyper growth phase, but we're starting a few things, especially here on the island, because on the island you have the wealthiest towns in America. Two towns away, you could have a town that's pretty poor.
Yeah.
So how about we start looking for underprivileged individuals, regardless of race or where they came from? I actually started doing that with my Jersey City office. We start looking for underprivileged individuals that have a good head on their shoulders, that we could actually at least take on their wing and say, hey, listen, we're going to show you an avenue where you could build wealth for yourself, and this is what's going to take.
Yep.
But the thing is, you can lead a horse to water. You can't force it to drink. And exactly. That's the thing about learning human nature.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about. And now you can too with InvestFAR. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
What you're pointing out is very important. I think a lot of times people forget that we are humans. And then it just goes to just being a particular color. And it's like, why can't we just look out for everybody? Why do we have to choose a side? And it's the same thing with politics. We got to choose to be on a side versus like choosing what's right for everybody. You know what I mean? So I think we need to take the humanistic approach and not just based on me being this color or me being this, you know, gender or whatnot.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, it's the stories that the media tells that, you know, many people act a certain way. It's messed up, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For real.
You know, we have, you know, I joke around, you know, and we have several offices. Our office on Long Island, Suffolk County, is our headquarters. So even in our headquarters, we have a lot of our client management team out there. Even though I would prefer that the executive team, like myself, have our own office, there's something about still being in the trenches with our organization. So even though I can't be in the our Jersey office or our Florida office that we're launching or the other out east office, like I said, we're growing pretty remarkably. I'm still, you know, I see my client management team out there. So something that's funny is I go out there and I made a joke and everybody, you know, we're all on the same page. So within our office, we had a section where over here we had six Black guys all together.
Okay.
All of a sudden I see a bunch of white guys, Asian American. And then one day everybody's, you know, just talking at lunch and we have music in the background and I shut the music off and I said, hey guys, everybody turns around and looks at me. So we got a problem here. They said, what? I said, you got to understand the optics of this. You got a white bald guy with tattoos on his neck. I got all the Black dudes in the corner over here. And they all started laughing. And I was like, you got to understand the optics of that. And everybody started laughing because they, you know, and we didn't do that on purpose. You
it
know
just happens
I mean?
Like that. Yeah.
know what I mean? Yeah. And that's another thing. And, you know, everybody thinks you can't joke around about hot topics like that. You can, you know what I mean? You got to know who you're talking to, and you have to have a friendly relationship. But, you know, and again, I think that's a massive issue. So to go back, what you asked me, like, you know, 7-8 minutes ago, as far as what VC could do with minority owned organizations, I can't answer that. I don't know. I can't speak to anybody else. I could only speak for myself. Mm-hmm. If the opportunity comes across, again, I don't look at anything beyond what that person's presenting to me.
Yeah.
They're presenting to me an idea that I believe in. But most importantly, the team behind that idea, I believe in. That's the most important thing. Because as a business man, I'm sure you would agree, dude. Mm-hmm. And I've learned, it took me years to learn this. 90% of what's going to be successful is the team behind it. Their mindset, their attitude, their ability to be resourceful, their ability to conquer, all that good stuff combined. And that's what I look for, man.
I mean, I appreciate that. I'm saying you went somewhere that most people don't want to go, right? You went. You told the truth. You're not being PC about it, which is great. And I tell you this all the time, man. Until you have a business, until you run your own business, you can't understand what business owners do and how they navigate. So it's hard for you to say this percentage of people do this if you don't know that percentage of people and you've never been in their shoes. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, the narrative is serious, man. I can't talk about that enough. I talk about this stuff on my podcast all the time, too. So I appreciate that.
Good. I think open light dialogue like this is even better. You know what I mean? It's true. I think, like you said, a lot of people are afraid to. I'm not afraid to broach any topic. You know, obviously, I always run the risk of pissing off a certain person or saying somebody. Yeah. But this guy, but you know what? Listen, man, the realest people are the most vilified.
Right.
And it's, you know, I like to be real and not have it have a detrimental effect on myself and my brand, not because of me, but I also have people out there that are relying on the success of this firm. I don't want to do anything detrimental to the firm. That being said, I'm also not going to be faking out people I am.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep it 100 with whoever. Doesn't matter.
Clearly with this photo of myself behind me. So.
So I know you mentioned, well, we talked about this. I know you're in different spaces investment-wise. I know you're in the metaverse. I know you're in crypto. What's your thoughts on the crypto space? You know what I mean? It's been changing a lot lately, but what are you guys doing in that space?
Yeah, I mean, we have our own crypto portfolio. We do not offer it to investors. Mm-hmm. Not as the regulatory environment is really harsh. They're trying to still figure things out. Anytime that you have a new asset class or something innovative, you're kind of conflicting with the, I mean, look who's in Congress and the regulators. You know, you have people that, you know, can't explain what a blockchain is or the, when they were talking about Facebook, they didn't even know how, you know, social media worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these are the people that are dictating the rules of all these upcoming emerging technologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an issue. So I think if they become educated more about certain technologies, it's going to be a boon. But no, we don't offer crypto anything to our clients aside from the two crypto investments that we made. We were investors in Coinbase several years ago. We're invested in another crypto exchange. That's the extent that we would allow our clients to have exposure to crypto, as at least right now. But we're not doing anything as far as like crypto funds specifically for our clients until we get at least more feedback on what's going on with the regulatory environment. I don't think the technology is going away anytime soon. I think it's today. But again, you know, you got thousands of tokens, most of which are BS, most of which are being pumped up. But if anything, I think this crackdown with FTX, we avoided FTX.
Mm-hmm.
And I was offered FTX.
Mm-hmm.
And I said no. So why did I say no? Did I have a crystal ball that what was going to go down was going to go down? No, not at the time. But a three-year-old company being worth $35 billion and doing all, you know, writing derivatives, it was just, to me, too risky at the point. I said, if I get into involved in another idea, we have enough exposure to crypto space. I think we will go with a different company. As far as Metaverse, I mean, Metaverse is going to be more practical in gaming, and we're invested in gaming people, companies. But we're still a few years away from that. And that's the thing, man, because you have all these buzzwords and all these hot topics that everybody wants to use to say, get in it now, let's pump this up, let's do that. But as an investor, I think my greatest advantage is I'm very disciplined and patient, and I look to cut the BS away from the truth. And at the same time, look to be on the cutting edge of something that might blow up down the road. So again, Metaverse, I could see the applications in the gaming. Virtual real estate and how much is being sandboxed in the central land. I'm not really that sold on as of right now. You got to show me something a little bit more robust than that. But that's where we are, at least then we stand. From a gaming perspective, same thing with virtual reality. Reality being a thing, at least for gaming. Augmented reality, mixed reality, I think there's definitely enterprise applications. That's definitely going to be a better bang for your buck as an investor to invest in mixed reality applications. Mm-hmm. That's my answer on metaverse and crypto.
So then I get a lot of people that come on for business. I deal with a lot of business owners. I mean, I have a business that's in the process of getting funded right now. How do we get companies in front of you? Is there a place that they can submit their deal? Do you do from Series B? Because I know you said later stage. Are you Series A, Series B, or how do we get these companies in front of you?
Yeah. So typically, so when we deal with companies on the later stage, we're not primary investors. We're not coming in with nine figures or anything and directly investing in the company. Most of what we do is on a secondary basis where we're predominantly purchasing from direct shareholders within that organization to get access to that company.
Got it.
We're in the process of looking at Series A and Series B companies. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but for every 100 good ideas, one's really good. And right. I tend to say no a lot just based on number one, less on the product, and number two, the person I'm speaking with. Mm-hmm. Because I think a dirty secret, dude, is the fact that a lot of these people don't know what product is going to work.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't realize that they're, I think Steve Jobs said it, that most people don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. So you could actually create a product and create a market for something that people didn't even think they knew or want. Mm-hmm. But that comes down to the people. So you bring a solid group of people that we could believe in and work together with. Mm-hmm. That's something that would be interesting to me. Something mm-hmm. unique. You know what I mean? That's really what it comes down to. It's just it's everybody has a hot idea, but the amount of people and the amount of deals that I've seen go south, and every time I look back, not that thankfully I haven't invested in them, nor have I put my clients on them, but tracking back and you see certain things, and 99% of the time it comes down to the people behind that company. And any major listen, I have respect for a lot of these famous venture capitalists like Mark Andreessen. Have a lot of respect for that guy. But if you look at Andreessen Horowitz, I believe that they're investing anywhere between 500 to 1,000 companies a year now.
That's crazy.
Right. So if you're investing that amount, obviously only a small portion is going to net those investors. Mm. But my style, as we continue to scale, is I'd rather focus on quality instead of being passive, actually working on that with that company, control that company, using our resources for that company, because our resources right now is our robust client base and our access to capital. Mm-hmm. And being more active instead of passive.
So then we have an email address, like an info ad, someone can send like a pitch deck, or how do you guys want to get deals?
Yeah, you could go on our website. We're actually restructuring the layout of our website a little bit. You go on our website, you contact us, you send it in. You could email me directly, dspaventa@tsginvest.com. We could set something up. I look at every single email that comes across my board. I get at least 5 pitches a day now. Actually, it's going to turn into 20 to 50. So with all those emails, I have to look for reasons not to, I have to look for reasons to, and it sucks, man, because trust me when I tell you, behind every single one of those emails is somebody that has a dream and a passion, right? Mm-hmm. But there's certain things that I look at, which I'm not going to say, that would catch my attention. And I would say, all right, let me have a conversation with this person. And I'm not preaching that I'm the best things to slice bread, or I'm the king, that I'm the guy to make it happen. But I kind of am one of them that can make certain things happen. And the larger my organization gets, the more leverage we're going to have, the more connections we'll have. And again, we're in the process of doing so. We have some prominent clients within our investor database. I'm not going to mention any names, but again, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, coming from my background, it's kind of remarkable that I have access to this now. So,
I mean, I'm telling you, same thing, man. On food stamps, did the whole thing. So, with that being said,
yeah, food stamps. I remember going to the store and getting the little check and saying, "Hey, Mark, can I have this?" No. It says right here. Oh, I can't have Sunny Delight. No, you could have the Pathmark grape, frozen concentrate. I was like, can I have, hot dog buns with my hot dogs? No, you take a piece of bread and you fold it, so.
Exactly, man. I know for me, my whole change in life was mindset. I had a mindset shift because, like you said earlier, I did some things coming up too, because you have to do certain things to maintain. So what helped you, and we're running out of time, what helped you though? Like, what was the shift for you to get you from that point to where you are now and still maintain a sense of like the drive and the stuff that came along with you coming up in that background? It had to be mindset, but what kind of books and things like that, that you can recommend?
I got posters out there who I call my true fathers. I tell this to everybody. I mention this on every single podcast. Andrew Carnegie, Napoleon Hill, Earl Nightingale. Because if I didn't have a father figure and I had nobody else to soak in, I'm going to soak in any of the words of wisdom by these gentlemen that were successful and are real. So I just soaked that in. And again, you know, because of my background, I spent my teen years being a victim. Then I switched and I realized nobody's going to mess with me. And I spent most of my 20s being angry. And then it got to the point where I was like, you know what, man, you weren't dealt a good hand. There's plenty of people that went through worse crap than you. Change your mindset, change your attitude. And I tell you, the moment you change your attitude, the universe changes around you. And what's helped me, because listen, the more successful you get, it could kind of get to your head. Mm-hmm. But again, I always focus on with the man I am now, with the 5-year-old kid in me when in the past, be proud of the man I am now. Mm-hmm. And I make that guide me for every decision I make. And like I said, between this picture here and Bob Ross there and my Nintendo Super Mario stuffed Matt animal over there and Ghostbusters and Back to the Future and Dracula and Frankenstein over here, I keep this stuff here, number one, because I like it. Yeah. But again, the moment you stop being a little kid is the more you become an asshole. And that's going to either make fun of me because I'm into pop culture, or you could respect the fact that, you know what, I'm still going to be humble and, you know, I'm doing what I want. I did want everything I want. So if I die tomorrow, I accomplished it. You know, I still have more to accomplish, but I'm not allowed any negative day in my life.
Man, Drew, I got to bring you back on, man. I mean, we're spot on. Obviously, like I said, we had similar backgrounds. So we moved through life very similar and we're doing, you know, some of the same things. That's kind of what comes along with it. But man, I appreciate you for coming on. I got to bring you back. I'm going to send you my deal so you can take a look at it and let me know what you think about it. But man, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We got to do it again.
Yeah, 100%.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others. Go to residualroads.com for mentorship, and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.